This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. The website at healthcare.gov is now working. Well, working better than it was. That's a good thing, right? But there are some 970 pages of regulations to the Affordable Care and Patient Protection Act. So you got to think there could be other surprises still coming from so-called Obamacare. Public health law specialist Tim Jost is one of the few who's actually read those almost 1,000 pages repeatedly. Probably why the national and even international media have been calling on him to explain things. He's taking time out to spend an hour with us today. Our regular public policy specialist Bob Roberts here too. And White House correspondent Anita Kumar has the latest from Washington. So if you've got questions about what's next in healthcare, we've got just the right team to address those queries right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. You can reach us by phone at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. The Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, if you will, is our focus for the hour ahead. A little later, we check in with White House correspondent Anita Kumar to see what news on this topic may be breaking in D.C. today. There does seem to be something new most days. But we start with someone who knows as much about the ins and outs of the new federal health care statute as most anyone. From Washington and Lee University, health law specialist Timothy Jost. Tim, great to see you again.
To be here.
And whenever you have public policy and politics intersecting, you want, if at all possible, to get James Madison University's Bob Roberts helping out. And today we are fortunate enough to be having just that. Dr. Bob, thanks for making
time
for us.
Glad to be here.
So, Tim, I know that one of Dr. Roberts' greatest frustrations is how the media has been covering Obamacare, and I'm sure we'll hear more from him about that in a matter of moments. But from your perspective, are there important things in the public conversation about this law that are being missed, things that you think people really need to know about the Affordable Care Act, but you suspect they do not yet know?
Well, I think one very important fact for people to know, or issue that people need to know about who are considering applying for coverage under the Affordable Care Act through the exchange, is the existence of what are called cost-sharing reduction payments. The Affordable Care Act...
Let me just make sure I track. Cost-sharing reduction payments.
Right.
Okay.
I'm going to explain what that means.
Oh, good.
Under the Affordable Care Act, people can purchase in the individual and small group market four levels of coverage, and those are identified with different metals, bronze being really the worst but least expensive coverage, and then silver, and then gold, and then platinum. And the correlate for the metal levels is what's called an actuarial value, or a percentage of claims that the insurance will cover as opposed to the insured individual having to cover. So
that's sort of like how much I have to make for a copay when I see my doctor,
yeah.
Or if I go to the hospital and I have a big bill,
yeah.
How much I have to pay before the insurance begins to kick
right.
in.
Right. It's deductibles, okay. It's copayments, it's coinsurance. But really the big issue is probably for most people going to be deductibles.
So if I have a bronze plan, which is the least of the plans,
yeah.
I can sort of guess that I'm going to have to pay a lot more if I have a big medical bill.
That's correct. In fact, you're probably going to have to pay a lot more if you have any medical bills,
right.
Because you have to pay for the deductible yourself out of pocket before you get any payments from the insurance company. And in a bronze plan, deductibles can be quite high, $5,000 or $6,000 for an individual and twice that for a family. Now, that's true today in the individual market, that plans often have high deductibles. And employers have been moving towards higher deductibles, although not nearly that high yet. Silver plans have lower deductibles. Gold and platinum have much lower deductibles. But if people's incomes are below 250% of poverty, which is about $29,000 for an individual or $59,000 a year for a family of four, people can qualify for cost-sharing reduction payments if they buy a silver plan. And those payments, if you're below 200% of poverty, are much higher. And in fact, they put you really at about the level of a platinum plan.
Okay, so I just lost track.
Okay, well, let me explain a little bit further.
Give me
this is why I think the media isn't following it,
and also sometimes when you're talking about numbers on the radio, it's a little harder to track than if you see it in the printed word.
Sure.
You can reread it several times. Yeah. So I'm sort of the rereader. Let's say I am that guy who's single and my income is just a bit less than 200% of poverty.
Yeah.
So that means that my salary is just under about $22,000 a year.
Yep. If you're around $22,000 a year for a single individual, you would be below 200% of poverty. You would qualify for one of these cost-sharing reduction payments that would significantly reduce your deductible and increase.
And that cost-sharing reduction payment, is that a kind of subsidy that the federal government will give me to buy health care?
It's a subsidy that the federal government will give the insurance plan that you sign up for to cover your cost-sharing, to cover the deductible that you would otherwise have to pay.
And one of the things you want me to know is if I signed up for a bronze plan, which is one of the least of the acceptable plans, I might actually be able to get it for free or for very little out-of-pocket expense on my part. But if I ever had a significant medical bill, I'm probably going to be shocked at how much I have to pay out of pocket.
You have read my mind. That's where I was going with this. That when people go to the exchange to sign up for a plan, they are going to see that the bronze plan will cost them less than the silver plan. In fact, for many people, the bronze plan may be free because the premium tax credits that are going to help pay for the plans are based on the cost of a silver plan. So they may say, the bronze plan's free, I'll take that. And that's fine until they have medical expenses. And then they're going to have to pay for an awful lot before they qualify for any coverage at all that the insurance.
So one of the things that you think that people are not hearing is the degree to which they need to give some thought and some caution about what they're getting when they buy a plan based on immediate out-of-pocket expense for health insurance versus what might be down the line for medical bills.
Yeah.
And it sounds, Tim Jost from Washington and Lee University, like maybe where you're going with this is that in most all cases, people ought to think seriously about stepping up to a silver plan, which might cost them a little bit more initially, but is going to save them a lot down the road.
Well, I'm not sure I would say that in all cases. I mean, in all cases, you can get better coverage if you pay more for your premium. And people really do. I think the overall lesson is people really have to look for value, which isn't just the price of the premium, but also how much coverage you get under the plan in terms of how much cost sharing you're going to have to pay and what the insurance plan covers. But the point I was trying to make is that for people who qualify for cost-sharing reduction payments with incomes below 200% of poverty in particular, but even below 250% of poverty, they really need to think seriously about buying the silver plan because they're going to get much better coverage with the cost-sharing reduction payments than they will get if they buy the bronze plan. That's the bottom line. People who qualify for these cost-sharing reduction payments really should buy the silver plan, because you're going to get much better coverage. And that's something I have not seen the media covering very well.
Bob Roberts, I hesitate to open this door. But to be fair, my question to Tim Jost was, what is it that you think people need to be hearing about the Affordable Care Act that they haven't been hearing? Okay, your turn.
The whole philosophy or economic model behind this is risk sharing, In other
risk sharing.
In other words, you have to have large enough pools in order to make these economically viable to spread the premium costs to different age groups. And the dilemma, what you're getting now is the whole mantra about if you keep your old insurance, you'd keep it. Fundamentally, that would never.
There was somebody in the White House who a couple of times said something along the lines of, "If you like your health coverage, you can keep it."
Yeah, but I viewed that at the time as political rhetoric, and not substance, and therefore I didn't think anybody was taking it seriously. Apparently, some people are politically they've used that. That would have been impossible. In other words, the whole purpose of the federal mandated plans was to do away with these what I call scam-type state insurance plans that didn't offer much coverage and charge you a lot of money or charge you a decent amount of money, and you ended up not getting anything.
So in essence, there were a lot of people who thought they had health insurance. They got it really cheaply.
Right.
But if they ever needed health coverage, they found that there wasn't much to their plan.
Right.
And under the new statute, those plans are no longer allowed.
Right. And because now the insurance companies can't kick someone out due to pre-existing conditions, we're going to have some pretty sick people get into these plans. People who haven't been able to get a coverage and who are going in these plans and are going to these plans now and will cost these plans considerable amounts of money. In order to keep their premiums at a decent level, we need to have people who are well better off, younger, who are in good health, pay into join up in the plans with the hope that they understand down the road they may need those services. We are not telling people there is, in a sense, I would say, a civic responsibility to participate in these pools for the benefit of society as a whole, and that's hard to explain to people that in a sense maybe I'm 28 and I'm a young male and I think I'm invisible. Why should I pay more? Okay, why should I pay more for my insurance if I'm going to take care of some people who are going to get sick when they're in the 40s and 50s or whatever?
I'm a little surprised, Bob Roberts, that there is not steam coming out of yours at this point, based on my previous experience when we've tried to touch on these issues. But it sounds to me, Bob, that there one of two things might be going on. Either I was really dumb when I believed the president's statement that if I liked my health insurance, I could keep it under this new law.
Yeah.
Or the media was doing a huge disservice at the time those statements were coming from the White House in not attacking them.
I wouldn't say attacking. I'd say explaining that in a sense, you might be able to keep your plans temporarily, but those plans were insurance companies were going to pull those plans sooner or later because they weren't going to be legal. And therefore, they couldn't keep them.
And based on this concept of risk sharing,
right,
economically, you could not have such plans continue in existence because everybody has to pony up and pay something so that we all get some degree of
coverage. An insurance company can't kick someone off anymore for a pre-existing condition. And therefore, they have to have a big enough pool to make those plans workable.
So which is it? Am I stupid or the media unfair?
I think the media was being very simplistic, that we use political rhetoric. We've always used political rhetoric in our campaigns, and that they needed to explain the purpose or how these plans were to work.
So one of the things that you're saying right now is all of the coverage that's been somewhere along the lines of, I'm shocked, I'm absolutely shocked that what the president said turned out not to be true, is at best simplistic on the part of reporters who should
know better.
I'd like to qualify that because the actual promise that the president made was that if you like your plan, you can keep it back in 2010.
Correct.
And literally that is true. The Affordable Care Act grandfathers in all plans that were in available in March of 2010, and they're still available unless insurance companies voluntarily cancel.
But they're canceling them.
And many insurance companies have changed what they've offered since 2010.
Yeah, but there's...
So there were other complications. But you know what? We have one of our favorite reporters on the phone line with us. And if you guys want, you can beat up on her because she's part of the national media. White House correspondent Anita Kumar going to join us in just a bit more than 1 minute. Here in the Insight Studio, James Madison University political scientist Bob Roberts, as well as public health legal specialist from Washington and Lee University's Law School, Timothy Jost. And now, joining us by phone, White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, Anita Kumar. Hey, Anita.
Hey, how are you?
Has the president signed up for Obamacare yet?
I don't think so. but he will. We have been told a couple times that he is going to sign up, which is pretty symbolic since I think he has his own doctors, presidential, White House doctors, medical team. But he has said he would do it, but we have not gotten word that he would. I love that one of my colleagues at the White House, another reporter, has asked if we could watch him sign up online.
Yeah, what'd they say to that?
They said they'd get back to us.
So maybe he's waiting until he gets word that the website's working.
Right. Or they'd stop everyone else from being on so he could just make sure he could get through.
I assume he'll sign up for the gold plan.
Yeah.
Or maybe the platinum.
I'm not sure.
Is there something more than symbolism about Barack Obama signing up for what he never used to call Obamacare, but I guess he accepts that title these days? Is he going to need health insurance at some point?
Well,
He leaves the White House?
I guess so, but we've still got about 3 more years. And, you know, I assume it depends on what he does after he leaves office. You know, a lot of people, like myself, has their insurance through their employers. So I don't need to go and sign up on the website because my employer provides me insurance. So, you know, we'll see what he ends up doing. So clearly he doesn't need to right now, but I think he's doing it to try to ensure people that the website's working.
Okay, we've got a test for you here, Anita. We've got Rod in Stanton who's calling in, and I know that Bob and Tim in the studio are going to be able to hear him. You tell us if for any reason you're having trouble hearing
him. Okay,
sure. Okay? Rod, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Bob Roberts, Tim Jost, and or Anita Kumar, please.
I'm a married guy, and presently the company I work for does not offer me insurance. So my wife covers me under her plan. For me to be covered, it's a significant amount more. She can cover herself for $5 a month, where if she adds me, I'm like $325 a month.
Correct.
So am I able to file as a single person and get my own separate insurance for the Obamacare? I have to be lumped in with my wife's salary because I'm only making like $20,000 a year.
Tim, let's send that question to you.
Yeah. Well, in the first place, the employer doesn't have to cover you.
Right.
But if the employer does offer coverage to you, I think the answer to that, and this is a very complex area, is that you probably would not qualify for coverage through the exchange if the coverage was affordable and adequate. And then you would have to figure out what is the actuarial value of the plan and also whether you could purchase the plan for 9.5% or less of your family income. But affordability would be based on the coverage for, based on the coverage for your wife. So it probably would be affordable. So I think the answer to that is you probably won't qualify for the premium tax credits. You could certainly check in the exchange, and you may be able to get coverage for less than what coverage would cost through your wife's employer. But okay. I think you probably would not, but I would certainly double-check that. This is a very complicated area.
Rod, let me make sure, because, again, numbers are sometimes hard to track on the radio. You said your wife currently is only paying $5 a month for her health insurance, and the employer pays the rest? Okay.
Yes.
And then if she adds you, it's how much more a month?
It's it's a total premium of $325 a month.
It goes from $5, they tack on an additional $320.
Yeah. That's not unusual.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Well, she's insured through Augusta County.
Right.
So what you would advise then, Tim and Bob, is for Rod to check on the website and see if he can end up getting a decent plan for less than $320 a month, whether or not he qualifies for subsidies.
That's correct. But my guess is you probably wouldn't qualify for subsidies
right.
because coverage for her is affordable.
Right. And I suspect, in fact, that if you got a platinum or a gold plan, that it might be as expensive or more expensive than what Augusta County would be offering a spouse.
But it's possible that he could get a silver plan for less than $320.
Or Brown's plan for less, if he's willing to self-insure himself.
Rod, thanks so much for a great question.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. It is kind of confusing.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Thank you so
much. And feel free to call us back. We're probably going to be doing another politics show early in January. We'd be happy to hear from you if you've had some experience with the website and you'd let us know what that was like.
An interesting tidbit on that, well, his question is that University of Virginia about 5 months ago, they sent an announcement to all their employees that if your spouse was, let's say, employed, that they would be kicking off the spouses off of their health plan. In other words, if the spouse had the availability of insurance plan themselves, they were no longer going to insure spouses who were employed, which is a huge change in terms of policy.
Speaking of changes, Anita Kumar in Washington, White House correspondent for McClatchy News Service. Has there been any significant news relative to the Affordable Care Act in the past 24 hours?
Well, I'm not sure what you're referring to, but they did have new enrollment numbers. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Actually, I wasn't referring to anything, Anita.
You know that
I ask you all the time off the air to treat me like I'm dumb, and you usually say, well Tom,
not...
I figure that I should do that anyway.
Okay.
Don't assume that I've read any of your headlines in the past 24 hours.
Well, there's been a couple things going on, but probably the bigger thing has been we got the new enrollment numbers, and that is the number of people that have signed up for, if we're calling it, so you know, Obamacare, or the signed up online, or in other ways for health insurance.
This is the website of healthcare.gov.
Right. And the numbers are much higher than they were the previous month. As we know, the rollout, which was in October, did not go well, and so the new numbers in for November more than quadrupled. So that's good, but it's still very low compared to what they anticipated. So to give you an idea, it's about 365,000, both people that state and federal enrollees. So that's the combination. Some states have their own exchanges. But they had anticipated 800,000 by this point.
Yeah, they were expecting to get a lot more, let's say, single people above the age of 26 when they get dropped off of their parents' plan. Mm-hmm. And they're not getting those people. And the question is, why aren't they getting those people? And I think that's a hypothesis. Are those people intentionally waiting until the website is working to sign on? Or are they have made a decision not to join or willing to pay the penalty?
When's the deadline?
March 31st.
March 31st.
So even though technically under the law you're supposed to have health insurance coverage by the beginning of the year, that's been changed or it's been extended?
No, the law always had a what's called a short gap, short coverage gap exception for the penalty, which said that you could be uninsured for a period of less than 3 months in a year and not owe the penalty. And HHS or the White House has interpreted that to mean that you have to be covered. Have to purchase coverage by March 31st to avoid the penalty.
And just to kind of put that into context, they had a goal, or have a goal, I guess, currently, that 7 million people will sign up for that coverage by that time,
right.
March 31st.
Yeah. And so it's not unusual when people are thinking about spending money that they might wait until the last minute?
Yeah. In fact, in the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, I think something like 22% of people sign up in the last 2 days of an open enrollment period. And so, and this has been true with all exchange-like plans, Medicare Part D. So I think that it's too early to panic, particularly since the website essentially didn't work for the first 2 months.
Right.
But they are behind schedule, but they do have 3.5 months to catch up.
With us here in the Insight Studio, Tim Jost, public health law specialist from Washington and Lee University Law School. Bob Roberts, public policy specialist from the Political Science Department at James Madison University. and specialist in all things about covering politics, Anita Kumar, White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service. I'm Tom Graham. And we do have a phone line open for you right now at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer to type instead of talk, you can post to us on Facebook where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And we have this on our Facebook page from Lawrence, who says, Congress is not going to make any changes to Obamacare right now because Republicans and Democrats cannot agree on much of anything. But if Congress could cooperate on this, what sort of changes or tweaks to the law do your guests think should be made? And Anita, you're only with us a short time, so let me ask you first, behind the scenes, off the record, do you hear people on either side of the aisle saying, you know, if we could get some sort of deal made, these are the kinds of changes we'd like to see made?
You know, I don't hear that very often. We're still, you know, despite they're now making some progress in some other issues, maybe we'll get back to that, but despite some other, you know, getting along on some other things this week, I still feel like Congress is in the same place. You know, Republicans just talk about huge postponements or an outright repeal, and the Democrats sort of won't engage on that because they think it should continue on. I mean, I just, you know, the president says over and over, I'll listen to any of your to Republicans. I'll listen to any changes you want to make, but it just doesn't seem to get very far. It's one side doesn't want it, one side does. And that's where
change the Republicans want to make is to kill it.
Basically.
Right.
And the cooperation that you alluded to there, Anita, was within the past 24 hours. We've heard that there's been this deal made that actually is going to keep the government open next year, as far as we can tell.
Which is huge. I know it's a different issue, but, you know, it just shows that Congress can, without, you know, the deadline being tomorrow, can actually get something done. But on health care, they are just in two different places, and we haven't really heard of anything substantive that they might tweak. Because they're just in different places.
Well, the talking heads were saying this morning the deal, the Republicans wanted to agree to that deal so they could focus their full energy in November on Obamacare, and that there would be no distractions, that would become the target. And if that's the strategy they're pursuing, they're not going to compromise because that is their ticket to controlling the Senate.
Public health law specialist Tim Jost, getting back to the essence of Lawrence's question, I guess he's probably thinking about the fact that in previous decades, when there was some sort of major piece of legislation, whether it was Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid, that there were tweaks along the way. Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense that if Congress was in a more cooperative mood, that there's something you'd like to see changed in how the law exists at the moment?
Actually, the thing I would fix first is the issue that was raised by our caller, which is what's referred to often as the family glitch, mm-hmm. the fact that affordability of employer coverage is determined on the basis of coverage for sole coverage for the employee and not family coverage. And that a whole family can be disqualified from getting premium tax credits because the employee alone can afford coverage only for him or herself. And that really should be changed. I'm not even sure that's the way the law reads. That's the way it's been interpreted. But if family coverage is unaffordable through an employer, then the family ought to be able to go into the exchange and get coverage with premium tax credits. Yeah. I think that's the biggest problem we have out there.
Bob Roberts, you can probably tell that Anita's got a little sore throat thing going on today.
Yeah.
And I realize that you guys are friends, but she's only going to be with us for a couple more minutes before she has to, you know, like go back to work. Mm-hmm. do you want to give her a hard time about how the national media has been covering this before she goes?
I'm just
I can take it.
I'm just saying that the media should have spent more time discussing the philosophy behind the program. That the whole idea this is a fairly conservative program based on Republican principles using private insurance. But the only way for this type of system to work is that you have large enough risk pools. And the risk pools are really dependent upon, I would argue, civic responsibility because the penalties are not severe enough to get people to do it. We have an example in Virginia, for example, where a similar in car auto insurance, where we don't require individuals to buy auto insurance in the state of Virginia. However, if you don't buy auto insurance in Virginia, you have to pay a $500 uninsured motorist fine. The fines are just too small to persuade.
The fines for healthcare, not for motorists.
No, okay. For healthcare are just too small to induce, I would believe, unless you appeal to their civic responsibility, to enter the program. Because too many, particularly males, are going to believe they're invincible. And therefore, they're not going to pay a lot more than nothing because they don't think they're going to use it. And therefore, either you had to have the fines heavier, it was politically unacceptable, or have a have the media explaining this a little better, that this is part of a broader scheme to basically that you have some responsibility to help these pools succeed.
Anita, you were at the time that the president was repeating that mantra, trying to get the law passed 3 years ago. If you like your health care, you can keep it. You weren't covering national politics. You were working for the Washington Post covering Virginia politics.
Right.
But now you're part of the national media. You're a White House correspondent for McClatchy. Does Dr. Roberts have a point that the national media failed to cover this story adequately and to say what the president is promising can't be true?
I would say a couple things. I would not say, Tom, that you are dumb, as you said earlier. But I do think that probably the media could have done a better job. But I also think that people could have, just regular people, could have also known a little bit more. I mean, I think it's a combination of both. I will say that when I was researching and writing in the last few weeks a little bit about this promise of you can keep your health, if you like it, you can keep it, I did go back and sort of read other reports and see how that came about. The bottom line is 3 years ago, Kathleen Sebelius, who's the Secretary of Health and Human Services, did talk about that. She did explain what was meant by that, who could keep it and who couldn't. Now, most people aren't paying too much attention to Secretary Sebelius. They're going to listen to the president when he goes out there and is on national TV. And he did it shorthand. I mean, he just used it. He didn't go into any explanation. So the reality is it was out there. People could have known. The media could have written more. But it was out there. So it's a little bit of both. I mean, maybe that's not an answer, but I think it was both. I did find that when I went back and looked at healthcare reporters at certain places like the Associated Press that was solely covering this issue, people did write some about it. But perhaps it should have been more.
For many years, she did cover Virginia politics as a reporter for The Washington Post. These days, she covers the world of politics as White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service. She's also a Charlottesville native. Anita Kumar, it may not be until next year before we get a chance to speak with you again, but thank you so very much for carving out some time for us today.
Thanks.
And we are definitely looking forward to that next time. In the meantime, happy holidays.
You.
To you listening, a word of thanks. This show is only on the air because of the 10% of our listeners who do ever make a contribution. As you may have heard, we've recently learned that we're getting even further federal cuts in funding to support WMRA. So to you who are making contributions, our gratitude is heartfelt. Our conversation continues in 1 minute. Next, we're going to Shenandoah County. This is Jason. Jason, we have here in the Virginia Insight Studio, Washington and Lee University law professor and specialist in health law, Tim Jost, as well as James Madison University Department of Political Science public policy specialist, Bob Roberts. My name's Tom Graham. We'd love to hear your question or comment.
Well, thank you for having me on the program. It's a pleasure to speak with you all. Here is my question. I run a small business with less than 20 full-time employees, and with the new Affordable Health Care Act, this gives me an option. Historically, I've always covered the health insurance of my staff, my full-time staff, but now with the option of allowing them to get their own health care through the Affordable Health Care Act, I'm presented with the possibility of saving my company a lot of money by no longer giving the health care coverage to the company, allowing them to get it on the marketplace and get a government subsidy to purchase it at the same time. My question is, with your expertise, what insights do you have what advice would you give me in this position?
Well, I think that
For small businesses, for large businesses, there is a what's called an employer responsibility requirement that if they do not offer their employees coverage, they face a penalty, a tax on them. But for small businesses, that doesn't apply, and businesses under 50 employees can decide whether they want to offer coverage or not. And for many small employers, particularly those with lower wage employees, it really does make sense for them to allow their employees to go to the exchange where they might qualify for premium tax credits and be able to get coverage for less than what they had to pay previously for employer coverage. Just a couple of comments on that, though. One is tax credits are available for small employers, in particular for small employers with 25 or fewer employees, and particularly if they have lower wage employees, that will cover now up to 50% of the employer's cost for small group coverage. So I'd certainly encourage you to talk to your agent and broker or tax advisor as to whether you might qualify for that kind of tax credit. The other thing is, too, I hope that small employers who do drop coverage so that their employees can go into the exchange would make up for some of the difference in increased compensation for their employees since they won't have to bear the expense of coverage anymore.
Jason, thank you so much for your call. We're going next to Nelson County. Amy, you're on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, hi. We have a son who has a pre-existing condition, and it's on a tumor, brain tumor specifically.
Mm-hmm.
He now, that's...
Oh, Amy, I'm so sorry. We're having all kinds of trouble with your cell phone.
Can't hear me?
Are you moving around? Or are you stationary?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
You don't have a landline, I take it?
Yes, I do. Now still it's cutting in and out?
Well, it is. If you could call us right back on your landline, we'd hear you so much better. And we do have lines open at the moment. As long as nobody else fills up those lines before you call us back.
Well,
we'd love to be able to hear you more clearly. And for anybody who's just joined
us. All right. Thank you. Sorry about that.
No, please do call back. 888-967-2825. While we wait for you to call and for Amy to call back, we're going to go next to Harrisonburg. This is Ron. Ron, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question and a comment. I just want to give one comment in defense of the president. And as I recall, when he said that people would not be losing the coverage that they had, it seemed to me at the time when he first made those statements, it had a lot to do with him trying to push back a little bit from some of what seemed to be an agenda by some of the media to scare people away from this whole idea of Affordable Care Act. And it seemed to me that he was just trying to respond to the whole idea that people would be losing the insurance that they had now. Because I know that many people didn't lose their insurance. Many people who are insured through their employer, they weren't going to lose any changes in their coverage. And maybe that is more specifically what he was responding to.
Let me respond to that. I think the president and his staff made a major mistake because they could have explained this by saying what you were going to get, even though you might be forced into another plan. The other plans that you're going to be offered would be so much better, probably, than you had already. He didn't need to do that. In other words, he didn't need to say somehow that you needed to keep your old plans, because the purpose of the new plans were to put you in a much better shape than you were. And so I was dumbfounded at the time why they were defending the old plans, your right to stay there, when they wanted to put out to the public that the new system was so much better. It was very confounding to me in terms of the strategy they developed to try to deal with what you were explaining would be being attacked. It didn't make any sense to me at the time.
Ron, thanks so much for sharing your perspective. We have some comments here on Facebook, so let's go next to the one from Lauren, who says, Republicans say we cannot afford to expand Medicaid in Virginia because we can't depend on the federal government to pay for it. Democrats say expanding Medicaid would not only help hundreds of thousands of Virginians get health care, it would create thousands of new jobs, expand the tax base, and pay for itself. Who's right? Bob Roberts?
We have some studies that indicate that, first of all, Virginia would receive about $2 billion a year if they expanded Medicaid. That would be money going to providers primarily, hospitals, doctors, etc. So that would be a stimulus. Other studies indicate that the multiplier effect could be as many as 30,000 jobs. So in a sense, clearly $2 billion a year is going to help the economy of Virginia. Whether Congress can pay for that is an interesting question. But I assume that if Congress decided not to pay for it, Congress would also decide to remove the mandate. So I don't think the Congress would, in a sense, put that unfunded mandate, because Congress would get so much pressure from the states that they probably couldn't do so. That's a philosophical question. Can we afford to borrow that much money to deal with Medicaid? My answer to that is we're already paying for these people. They are being treated. They're being taken care of through the system, and the states aren't being reimbursed for that right now.
That's because they can go to emergency
rooms. That's right, and
they get fairly lousy care at emergency rooms. I don't mean the emergency rooms are doing a bad job. I mean you have to have an emergency. If you need ongoing chemo treatment because you have cancer, you can't get that in an emergency room.
Actually, the law is already clear that yes, you're right. There are treatments you can't get in an emergency room. And that is a real problem for people who are not eligible for Medicaid and will not, as of 2014, be eligible for premium tax credits in Virginia because they earn less than 100% of the poverty level. The law is already clear that if Congress would decide to reduce the funding levels below what is promised, mm-hmm. that the state could opt back out again,
right.
Although politically that might be difficult. I guess one question I'd like to ask Bob is, what difference is our gubernatorial election going to make as to whether we're going to expand Medicaid or not?
It depends upon how effectively the healthcare lobby can deal with members of the House of Delegates.
Yeah.
Because the pressure is going to be intense from the hospitals, particularly in Harrison, the Sentara, the major hospital corporations, some of them nonprofit and profit, because they're the ones who are bearing the brunt of that. And therefore, how many of these delegates are going to feel such political pressure from their not necessarily the constituents, but from those healthcare providers saying that we badly need this money, that they might compromise. I think that's the cornerstone. Can the governor McCall work with the healthcare lobby to basically put pressure on enough members of the House of Delegates to change their mind? And that's going to be very interesting, because if they do change their mind, many of these Republicans will be primaried.
Let me make sure that I understand the backstory to Lauren's question, and in case there's anybody listening who wants to double check this as well. The news reports have said that if the state of Virginia were to reverse course and exercise its option to accept federal money to expand Medicaid, mm-hmm. then about 400,000 more people in the state of Virginia would qualify for this expanded
Correct.
Medicaid to be paid entirely
for
the first 3 years by mm-hmm. the federal government.
And then 90%.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, the federal government says it would pay 90%.
Right.
The state would have to pick up 10% right. of that.
By 2020.
By 2020.
It's phased in.
Phased in.
And at this point in time, because this separation of Medicaid from the rest of the Affordable Care Act happened as a result of the Supreme Court decision last year,
right.
about June of 2012, mm-hmm. announcing that as the act was originally designed to force states into expanded Medicaid, that was unconstitutional.
Right.
So now states have the option.
Right.
Because this sort of loophole situation was created, the way the health care law is being enacted in those states like Virginia that have chosen not to take those federal dollars and not to expand Medicaid, you have several hundred thousand people who don't qualify for any kind of
subsidy.
Subsidy, and can't afford to buy health insurance on their own,
right,
and basically are just stuck. In Virginia, Tim Jost, is it like anybody who is at 30% of poverty or above, a single adult, does not qualify for Medicaid?
In Virginia, if you are an adult who is below the age of 65, not disabled, and don't have minor children, you do not qualify, period.
For
it
Medicaid.
Doesn't,
yeah,
doesn't
no
depend
coverage.
How poor you are.
Right.
If you are a parent, my understanding is that the eligibility level is 30% of poverty.
Right.
Children, disabled people.
So you have a lot of working poor people.
You have a lot
who were originally designed to get coverage under the Affordable Care Act, but with this new separation out of state choice on Medicaid, they're not going to get help.
Right. And in other states that have expanded Medicaid, and there are more of them all the time, you're hearing stories of people who have been paying a lot of money for health insurance and went to the exchange and realized they were eligible to get Medicaid for free,
right,
which is very good coverage in terms of what it covers and very low cost sharing, although some people have a hard time finding providers. But even there are still a lot of providers, who particularly hospitals, that will accept Medicaid.
Right. Lauren, great question. Thanks so much. We're going to go next to Danny, who's been traveling along the highway. Danny, your question, please, for public health law specialist Tim Jost and or political scientist Bob Roberts.
Well, either one of them. Sound like both of them got a little bit of brains in between their head handles. I'm a military. I got hurt in Nam. I was over there 3 years. I got busted up pretty bad, so they take care of me. But my wife does not work, and my son's a bodybuilder. The insurance on my wife alone is going to be around $12,000 a year with a $15,000 deductible. Yeah, lovely insurance. And my son's a bodybuilder, has no, you know, basically not a job. Where do I stand in both situations? And I'll listen in. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny.
Well, I would definitely urge both your wife and your son to go to the website, to healthcare.gov, and apply for coverage. She certainly should be able to find a plan with a lower out-of-pocket limit than $15,000, because that would be illegal under the Affordable
Correct.
Care Act.
Yeah.
And she may very well qualify for a premium tax credit that will make her coverage much more affordable. But it would depend on the facts of the income in your family, your son's income, but I definitely would urge you to go to healthcare.gov. It's starting to work better now, so you should be able to register and get through there, and she may very well find that she can find a very affordable plan with much lower cost sharing.
Thank you so much, and I'm sorry we did not get a call back from Amy that we were having trouble hearing before. What little we were able to hear, she was talking about her daughter having cancer. I can only guess where she was going to go with a question, but one of the things about people who have pre-existing conditions now under the new law, good news?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Today, actually about 2 hours ago, the HHS announced, Federal Health and Human Services Department announced, that the federal pre-existing condition high risk pool, which was insures about 105,000 people across the country, which was supposed to close its doors on December 31st of this month, is going to be extended for another month now, so that the people who are part of that can have a bit more time to get onto the website and find coverage through healthcare.gov or through the state exchanges. So I think that's good news for these people, who are people with very high medical needs, who really need coverage. Some of whom have been having a hard time getting on to the website to get coverage for 2014. And, of course, the big good news for them is that as of January 1st, pre-existing conditions can no longer be considered by any insurer in determining whether to insure someone or not.
Our guests have been the Willett Family Professor of Law from Washington and Lee University, Tim Jost, plus Professor of Political Science and Public Administration at James Madison University, Bob Roberts, as well as earlier in the broadcast, McClatchy Newspaper's White House correspondent, Anita Kumar. Thank you so very much for making time
Thank
for
you.
Us. Virginia Insight's executive producer, Matt Bingay. Our associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. We had extra help today from the wonderful Dan Easley, and some of our break music supplied by Robert Jaspe and Inner Rhythm. You can find postings of Virginia Insight on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you'll find links to more information about each of our guests and the work they are doing. And if you go to the Virginia Insight Facebook page and click like, you'll get a whole bunch more information about these broadcasts there as well. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.